Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Keeping It Real with Cindy. Tonight, I have such a special guest. To me, this is like being a kid in a candy store. Every time I have him on, it just blows me away. I could talk to him all night long. Of course, you know that I'm talking about Dr. Eldon Taylor. You know, I usually play a song. I know I do, guys, but not tonight because I didn't even want to waste that 4 minutes. I wanted to first welcome him back. He's been here before, and he just blew me away, as he did a lot of you. He has a bio that reads like a book, so I'm going to kind of go through that really quickly, too. But he is a CEO of Progressive Awareness Research Incorporated. He is a New York Times best-selling author of so many books, CDs, audio, too many to even name, although I've put up his websites in the chat room for you to go to his wall and or to his websites and see everything that he has available. He does lectures. He's had television appearances. He's been on radio shows. He has his own radio show, Provocative Enlightenment. He was given a plaque naming him Holistic Business Leader of the Year in 2011. I just literally listened to him on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, which was so much fun listening to that interview. And for those that are not in the chat room, it's Eldon, www.eldontaylor.com. He also has another website, www.innertalk.com and www.progressiveawareness.org. He's made a lifetime study of the human mind, which is so fascinating to me, and he's earned his doctoral degrees in psychology and metaphysics. He is a fellow with the American Psychotherapy Association and a non-denominational minister. I've been so excited about having him back on. I just thought today was never going to get here. So I'm so sorry, dead air. I had myself on mute, and I just went through this whole... Oh, my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I just went through this whole thing on his bio. So I'm going to start over, guys. Please forgive me. I didn't mean for that to happen, but I guess the show is called Keeping It Real with Cindy, and I made a boo-boo. But I've been so excited about Dr. Eldon Taylor coming back on the show that it's like I'm a kid in a candy store. So please, please forgive the dead air that I just caused. But I wanted to welcome him back to the show. His bio that reads like a book is a CEO of Progressive Awareness Research Incorporated. He's a New York Times best-selling author. He has so many books, CDs, audios, too many to even name. So I've posted all of his websites in the chat room. He lectures, he's had television appearances, he has a radio show called Provocative Enlightenment. He was given a plaque naming him Holistic Business Leader of the Year 2011. I just listened to him on Coast to Coast. He had an interview with George Norrie. I just literally finished listening to that. For those that are not in the chat room, his websites are www.eldontaylor.com, www.innertalk.com, www.progressiveawareness.org. He's made a lifelong study of the human mind and has earned doctoral degrees in psychology and metaphysics. He's a fellow with the American Psychotherapy Association and a non-denominational minister. I know, I'm so excited to have him here. This is the first time I've ever done the dead air thing, and I hope he forgives me, but I'm bringing him on the air right now. Dr. Taylor, are you there?
I am, Cindy, and it's Eldon, you know that. And I'm glad you listened to George and I have a conversation, because, you know, what I like to do when I'm talking with you is just have the same kind of conversation I have with George, and that makes for a great show, and you're a wonderful host at making that.
I know, I'm so embarrassed about the dead air, though. I was so excited.
I'm embarrassed. I heard you do it twice.
I know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for all the listeners, but I really do apologize. I've never done that before, but I guess my excitement, and I have to say I am like a kid in a candy store when I'm talking to you, because it's so amazing what you have. You know, all of
you need not be embarrassed. You know, we all do those kinds of things. I think it's cute.
So, I'm kind of like, yeah, but okay, guys, again, I'm sorry, but we're going to move along. But you actually were talking tonight about your new book, which I've read and is absolutely amazing.
Thank
called
you.
Self-Hypnosis and Subliminal Technology, A How-To Guide for Personal Empowerment. And it's already reached number one on Amazon in several categories, and number 10 in all books.
Right. It's now an international bestseller, and we're trying to push it, of course, onto the New York Times list. But it's more than a book, as you know.
I know.
May I?
Of course.
I mean, I'm excited about it. But since you brought it up right in the beginning, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about how the mind works and so on and so forth. But wherever I go and I lecture or people read my books, et cetera, I'm always asked, okay, I get it. I mean, I get it. But what do I do? How do I change all this scripting that's in my head, all this stuff that is self-sabotaging? What do I do? And of course, I can tell them, you know, if you want to be a fisherman, go get a fishing pole. If you want to be a mechanic, go get yourself a set of tools. Well, it occurred to me, hold it a minute. Instead of telling people, go get a fishing pole, why don't you give it to them?
Mm-hmm.
So what we did with this book, and it's really not a book, it's a course. It's a multimedia course. I think it's the first of its kind, Cindy, because, you know, you've got written material, of course, you've got a book. But you've also got it augmented with the audio CD that comes with it. And as you advance, you've got all these URLs that you go to for additional advanced training, deepening techniques, and so forth. So what we did is we sat down with Reed Tracy, the CEO of Hay House, and said, this is what I want to do, and I'd like to make it free if I can, but, you know, I don't know how we can possibly do that. This is information, courses that they sell for thousands of dollars. Indeed, my wife paid more than $1,000 initially for herself to learn self-hypnosis. So I said, how can we do this? And we came up with this multimedia idea. And, you know, the best part about it all, it teaches you self-hypnosis. You do the self-hypnosis. You actually experience it. You're given the tools and trained to use those tools. And it teaches you how to create your own subliminal. Because those two technologies are the most powerful technologies I know of for accessing the subconscious and changing all these self-defeating beliefs. You can't talk them out. You can say to yourself, all you want, I'm good, but you're apt to get, you know, back talk that says, sure, good at what? Do you remember when? So
right.
Being able to actually, you know, converse with the unconscious, that's the most important part of it. But I'm really excited about it. And then there are all those wonderful luminaries like yourself who said, hey, we want to help you make this, you know, available to everyone. And so you came in, and there's like 150 gifts that come with the book when you get it. You don't buy it from me, but if you go to my website, then that's where you find out how you get all the gifts. You can buy it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And you know, I looked at this just a little bit ago, and at Amazon and Barnes, they're both barely over $10. I mean,
right.
That's as close to free as you could possibly get that kind of material.
And you know, what's amazing to me about this is that it is such an unusual book that it actually is individualized to the person that reads it. It's like an ongoing course that can be used over and over and over for whatever it is that you need to work on.
Right, right. And I love, I mean, I want to thank you right now on the air for supporting me and being as kind as you have, both to bring me to your radio show to have this conversation and talk about the book, but also for the gift and everything else that, you know, your involvement totally in helping people, you know, get these two tools. They are really powerful. You know, the research shows that, well, just today I read a new study, brand new, when NIH released, our Institute of Health, that shows 76% of hot flashes are reduced by using hypnosis. Now, you know, everyone that experiences... Yeah, I mean, no kidding. It did my wife as well. She said, I have no idea that you could do that. And she knows hypnosis, a brand new study, a brand new, you know, area for work with hypnosis. But, you know, addictions and indigestion, insomnia, irritable bowel syndrome, labor, delivery. I mean, I've used hypnosis to assist people in having natural delivery. Cancer-related issues, pain, skin disorders, phobias, stress, tension, headaches, tinnitus, warts, bedwetting, weight loss, blood sugar management. You think of it, bruxism, fear.
Everything. I mean, literally.
All of that.
That's
has
what
been
blew
successfully
me away. Yeah.
Treated with hypnosis.
Mm-hmm. Anger management. I mean,
absolutely.
Anything that could hold you back from being the person that you want to be, you could use this program that I'm not even going to call it a book, this program to benefit you, to help you erase those past subliminal messages that are ingrained, in a sense, and correct me if I'm wrong on anything because I have no issue with that. But in it, you know, what I'm saying there is that all of these things have been put into us over all of the years that we've, you know, been through life.
That's right.
That keep us from being able to move forward. And I agree with you completely. And actually, I heard you say at one point, which I need you to tell the listeners, this program will actually help you in such a different way than just your daily affirmations, because we kind of have that other part in our subconscious that fights affirmations.
You're absolutely right, Cindy, and I mean, and that's a very good point to bring out. I think of this as a multimedia program and not as a book, so I totally agree there. But you know, what a lot of people don't understand is we don't consciously make all the decisions we think we do. The fact of the matter is, where everyone is familiar with the prefrontal cortex and information processing there, short-term memory, choice, decision, the advent of fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, gives us the ability to watch the brain live time. And what we've learned, and here's a word, here's a term, everybody may as well get down because you're going to hear a lot of it over the next 10 years. There's an area in the brain, in the unconscious, called the nucleus accumbens that makes 90% of your decisions. Now, let me emphasize this. An fMRI tech watching the scan of your brain can know what you're going to do, what you're going to decide, in as much as 10 seconds in advance of you knowing. In other
Which
words,
is amazing.
It's flabbergasting.
Yes.
The unconscious has made the decision, and you think you have made it. It's actually giving you that information. It's doing all the calculation. Well, now hold it. That should alarm you. especially when you think of all the information that is in the unconscious that's doing the calculating for these decisions. I mean, first of all, you've got, as you suggest, Cindy, all of the experiential information, what your peers and your parents, you know, all of, I think of it as the no don't. How many times people have been told they're not old enough, they're not smart enough, you know, you can't possibly do that. I want to grow up and be a singer. Yeah, sure. So does everybody else. Kind of thing. We are told all these limiting things, and then we can be told ugly things like you're fat or you're skinny, you have a funny smile, you know, your hair is horrible. And then we plug in to the television set and the media, and we get all these commercials, and, you know, they have one thing in common. They're there to tell us about our deficiencies.
Right.
Your complexion isn't as good as it could be. Maybe your weight's too much. Your apparel is not complete. You drive the wrong automobile. In other words, they create a need by pointing out something missing inside or with each and every one of us. So we take all this deficiency salesmanship, if you will, that we've taken aboard, and it's part of the biocomputer in our unconscious mind. Now, add to that all of the defense strategies that get assembled as we go through life, because we're creatures that, for all intent and purposes, you know, we seek to be accepted. So we seek to avoid rejection. The end result of that is, you know, we find ourselves in situations where, I'll just tell a, you know, one on myself. When I was a boy, I did want to be a singer. I thought I'd be a Wayne Newton when I grew up. And one day we were at a family reunion, and in that family reunion, my mother's side of the family, my father's side of the family, they didn't always get along. They're about to have this, you know, serious argument, and my mother puts me out in the middle of the floor and says, you know, my son sings. Sing. Well, you know, my voice broke up. I was terrified. Tears flowed. I ran out of the room. That was the end of my singing career. Now, I didn't ever consciously say to myself, I'm never going to sing again. But somehow, unconsciously, I did. I'm never placing myself in that jeopardy again. I don't want to go through that humiliation, that form of rejection. There is no way. Now, the only reason I know that today is I had an uncovering experience. What does that mean? Well, I had an entertainer come to me who suffered some pretty serious performance anxiety and asked me to create a custom program. So I did. You know, we did what we normally do. We look at the profile of the person that would experience the anxiety, and we look at the profile of a person that never has it, and we do a mutually exclusive set, and I created this program. It was late on a Friday night when I finished the mixing, so I grabbed it in a recorder. This is going back years, tape recorder. Threw them in my briefcase, jumped in my car because I had reservations and a cabin in the mountains, and off I went. I arrived there late. I decided, you know, I think I better listen to this, make sure of its quality before I ship it off on Monday. I put it on, and I sat back on the bed and started reading some papers and things that I brought, and I fell asleep. The affirmations on that program triggered a dream, which was really the revivification of this experience with my mother. Now, why does that have a bearing? Well, this is why. A friend of mine, prior to this experience, asked me if I would share some of my research with his honors class at the University of Utah. And I said, sure, you know, I'm happy to do that. Honors classes are 20, 30 kids, and you know, I mean, generally just sit around and talk. Where are you meeting, I said. He said, Kingsbury Hall. Well, Kingsbury Hall seated 1,200 people or more. This was a theater hall.
Oh, my gosh.
Why Kingsbury Hall, Bill? Oh, you know, I'm president of the Black Chemists of America, and there's some 800 black chemists here, and I want them to hear what you've been working on as well. My stomach hit the floor. I was terrified. I knew not why. I was unable to actually do that presentation. And it was a couple of months later when I did this program, And it had this revivifying experience, remembering the dream, that I realized what that fear was about, why I had been unable to go into Kingsbury Hall and share my experiences. Now, if I hadn't uncovered that, we wouldn't be having this conversation today.
Right.
Because at that point in my life, I was petrified of any kind of public speaking, petrified of getting up in front of an audience. I could sit down and talk to some students, but don't ask me to stand up there in front of a podium or, you know, start talking on television or the radio where, you know, you've got thousands of people out there. Get curious, these things. So we have all these defense strategies, these mechanisms that we develop, and those mechanisms come along with us. You know, there was a woman that I talked to not long ago, well, I guess now it's been about over a year, who used hypnosis, self-hypnosis technique, to look at her weight problem. And one of the, I suggested to her, what you do is you just start going back to when you started to have the weight problem, when you began to use food the way you use food, you know. And as she did, she systematically got back to a point where she was in high school. And she had a bad breakup with a boyfriend who went off with her girlfriend, and it really was painful.
Mm-hmm.
And what she decided was she didn't want any more relationships. She didn't ever want to get hurt like that again. And so she began to assuage her anxiety with the oral palpative of food. And as she did, she was armor-plating herself, literally protecting herself from being attractive and becoming involved in another relationship. And once she had that uncovering, she was able to change her programming and lose the weight that was appropriate. You know, one thing that happens that people don't really realize is that the mind works very much like a video recorder. We process all kinds of information, peripheral information, subliminal information, that we're not consciously attending to. So we're attending to so little of the total information that if we were to look at it as 100 bits on the table, we're attending to 2 or 3 is all.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of that information is being processed, but not within our attention. Now, let me give you an example of how powerful the mind is that way. As you know, I used to do forensic hypnosis when I was involved in criminalistics and law enforcement. And one evening, I got a phone call from a police department regarding an armed robbery. The victim of the armed robbery had closed to theaters late at night, like 1 o'clock in the morning, had taken his night deposit to the bank, which was basically in the same parking lot because this was a strip mall. And as he got ready to make that night deposit, put that money bag in the depository, a big gun was shoved in his face and a robbery occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we tried talking to him about what happened, you could visibly see the fear in him. You could see, you know, him tense. You could see the veins in his body and his forehead, his neck begin to stand up. I thought at one point maybe his aorta would just jump out of his body. So what I did, you know, is I relaxed him, and then, you know, I had him replay the incident as though it were a movie in his mind. Now, when he did that, we got some really interesting information, Cindy. First, we got the kind of information that you would expect anyone who wasn't in great anxiety under great stress to remember. He remembered the hand and the grease that was under the nails and on the knuckles, indicating that this was somebody that was a mechanic or worked in that field. He remembered the grip of the gun. He remembered the caliber of the weapon, the sleeve of the arm. He didn't get a look because he wasn't allowed to look forward. But we got more of a description than just a big gun. But then he also had a glimpse in the rearview mirror, something that we're not likely to have obtained any other way than through hypnosis. And the glimpse in the rearview mirror had been of the car pulling behind him, the door flying open, the dome light coming on, the perpetrator running toward him, And, of course, with that dome light on, he had a brief look at the driver of the vehicle. Now, he was able to describe that in detail. And what's more, because he had been a Hertz rent-a-car manager, he was able to give us the make, the model, and the year of the automobile. We had recovered the money before daylight as a result of that information. So if you think about that, it's like the mind. You have access to so much information. You know, when people ask me, you know, what is hypnosis, I like to demystify it. Because, you know, for some people, hypnosis is scary. That's like mind control.
Well, that's what I had that question for you, because I actually had some people reach out to me before I had you on the show that are, you know, have a fear, and I already know the answer to this question, but have a fear that they would be put in a position where they would do something that they would not normally do. And so I wanted you to talk about that too. But before we go there, you know, the subliminal messages that we were talking about earlier, where we're given all of these things, the negativity, that basically people tell us we're not good enough, we're not this, we're not that, and we protect ourselves by sometimes doing things that we wouldn't otherwise do, like, for instance, emotional eating, which you just spoke of. But when we go out, and I just wanted to bring this fact up too, because I've noticed it, because I'm one of those that pays attention. In everyday life, just driving down the road, you'll see street signs that have subliminal messages that actually feed into our issues. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well,
you know,
go ahead.
You have a big sign that is making, you know, a particular fast food restaurant sandwich seem like something that you need to get.
Right.
And
right.
You know, so there are so many, there's subliminal messages in almost everything. And even in my mind, and I had noticed this a while back, even in some things that we look to for help. You know, a person, a writer, might write something that makes the reader think that they've accomplished something that the reader wants to accomplish. But that, you know, the way that it's written says that the writer has accomplished that, but we don't know that the writer actually has. But we want to follow that writer because we think that they've, you know, managed to accomplish something that we want really bad. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, yeah, and you've packed a lot into that statement. I understand fully what you're saying, and if we define subliminal information to be any and all information that we process without attending to, you're absolutely right. You know, the Macintosh Apple computer, that logo, when you see a television movie and, you know, cops and robbers, and they open up that laptop computer and you see Apple, you just had a subliminal message delivered to you. It's called product placement. The neuromarketers, while you're on that subject, and I say neuromarketers because the old days of scientific marketing, where we actually measured things like blood pressure and galvanic skin response to see how you responded to product slogans, to product pictures, and so forth, that's given way to using this new technology, MRI, to watch the brain respond. And so we call those folks neuromarketers, and billions and billions and billions of dollars have been spent to learn how to plumb the depths of your unconscious and thereby motivate you you know, buy, to consume. I was told in psychology, Cindy, that there are four basic human drives: fight, flight, feeding, and fornication, the four Fs. And that's true. But in today's society, there's a fifth F, and that's more. We have been so trained to consume, so trained to need more, more money, more power, more time, more goodies, more clothes, more, that consumption has become a stress reliever. It, people will use their weekends to go shopping as opposed
right.
to walk in nature or to meditate or to do something healthy, exercise. They will consume. And in part, you know, our economy is dependent upon that absurdity. But the real problem is it's a condition of alienation, self-alienation. It's not who each of us really are. You and I have talked before, and I'm pretty sure you know that my favorite question today is, what was your last truly original thought? We have been so plugged into this 24/7 media, this 24/7, you know, whether it's print or it's TV or whatnot. In fact, the latest study I saw showed that the average adult, by the time they reach the age of 65, will have spent 9 years in front of television. And we're talking about computers. We're talking about Facebook. We're talking about television. Well, if you add these other artificial environments, the computer, the video games, and so forth, how much time are we spending being virtual as
right.
opposed to being real? And you know, now that segues into what we were about to talk about, or what I was about to talk about, and that is, what exactly is hypnosis? Is it scary?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a court, we objectify hypnosis this way, and I've testified as an expert witness. It's a brainwave activity.
Mm-hmm.
What is this brainwave activity? Well, in normal brain activity, normal daily states, we're typically in what's called beta, and that's 15 to 30 cycles per second. If you're stressed, you know, it could be more. But let's say, you know, you're out here operating 25, 30 cycles per second, normal consciousness, you know, running around, dealing with everything. Now, in the twilight stages, as you fall asleep or as you wake up, you go through what's called alpha, 8 to 14 cycles as predominant brainwave pattern. So, you know, 30 cycles versus 8. Think of it this way. If you were to draw 30 lines on a piece of paper within 1 inch, and right below it draw 8 lines within that same 1 inch, you would see that there's quite a bit of space, quite a bit more space in the 8 lines between the lines than there is in the 30. Now, this analogy is a good one, because if you think then of that as fencing material, obviously the 8 cycles allows many more things through the fence than the 30 cycles. Well, what has that got to do with alpha? This. There's two things about alpha everybody should know. One, the mind is open. I think of the mind this way. Look, let's just think of it as systems. System one is the conscious stuff, okay? That's what I consciously am actively involved in. And system two is all the automatic and the unconscious. And the automatic would include, you know, writing, signing my name. If I stop and look at every stroke that I make signing my name, all of a sudden my name doesn't look like it does ordinarily. So there's an automatic process. I'm driving on the freeway. Maybe I've been driving for 10 or 15 minutes. Suddenly, oh, there's my exit. So I move over and I exit. For 10 or 15, maybe 20 minutes, I've been thinking deep in thought about something. I've been driving safely, but I haven't been attending to driving. That form of automatic. And then that total unconscious decision that's coming out that I have really no control over, that's giving me, you know, the choice that we discussed earlier, the nucleus accumbens engaging my conscious activity. All right, now, if I think then of system one and system two, if I want access to system two, where do I get it? Think of it this way. I wake up, I first wake up, wow, what a dream. I have to tell somebody about that. I step out of bed and the dream is gone. I have moved from that alpha state, that twilight state of waking, into normal consciousness. I have lost access to part of my own mind. Now, that alpha state we go through, as I said, you know, in the twilight stages of our sleep, in REM sleep. If we meditate, we'll get into alpha. If we practice long, in fact, self-hypnosis is a powerful way to learn meditation. Most people aren't able to get into the states that you can in self-hypnosis. But in meditation, in front of the television. Now, why in front of the TV? Listen, let's go back to this brainwave. Is the eight cycles, I can accept more information. What does that mean? If you were to go to the Language Learning Institute in Bethesda, Maryland, you'd find out, and this is where they teach foreign languages in 30 days to our military or intelligence people, intelligence community, I suppose I should say. If you were to go there, you'd find out that they, or discover that they play Adagio Largo classical music. Music that is 60 beats a minute music. Why? Because it entrains the brain and you move into this alpha state. If you sit down in front of your television set, those frame rates are 50 to 60 cycles per second or per minute.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what happens is you find yourself entrained in the television just as you do with the music. Now,
right.
We know from hard research that if I offer 99% of the population $100, if they'll just stay in normal consciousness in front of television for 3 minutes, they fail to do so. They go into alpha. And it is this frame rate. So we experience it every day. Now, what's the other thing we know about it? Well, it's not just this altered state of brainwave, this slowed brainwave, this super learning, accelerated learning place that people use in all these sophrology and suggestopedia. It is also a state of hyper-suggestibility. In hypnosis, one can... I can suggest that I'm going to burn you, and I can rub you with an ice cube, and you'll blister.
Right.
I saw Professor Carl Lepresch put himself in a full-body catalepsy, rigid and stiff like a board of steel, his ankles on one chair, the back of his neck on another chair, nothing underneath him, and two adult males sit on him while he lectured wide-eyed in this state of hypnosis. There's
right.
just amazing possibilities. Now, would you do anything in this state that you wouldn't otherwise do? The answer to that is no.
Right.
You know, some of the misconceptions, I mean, in hypnosis, if you're suggested to do something against your will, your eyes pop open and you're wide awake right then and there. Most
mm-hmm.
people that experience hypnosis say, I don't think I was hypnotized. It was kind of like I went to sleep. I kind of lost track of what was happening. Until you counted me up. I became aware when you snapped your fingers, but I think I was just sleeping. And the reason they say that is the only way you identify this state normally is because you go through it, falling asleep and waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, lots of folks also, Cindy, say, well, only the weak-minded can be hypnotized, and that is so false, it's unbelievable. When you get right down to it, the smarter you are, the brighter you are, the better the hypnotic subject you are. The fact is, the only people that can't experience hypnosis are those, you know, very small children that don't have attention span long enough to be able to focus or concentrate, or, you know, individuals that are indeed mentally handicapped.
Right.
So does that answer your question about, is it scary?
Yeah, it does. It's you know, I've had that asked, so many people that I know asked me to ask that question. And I, of course, because I listen to and read most of what you write, knew the answer already. But I wanted you to explain it because you have that scientific backing behind you that helps people to understand. You know, the same thing when a person, you just covered, when a person says that they can't be hypnotized. But I think that's also been proven out by the discussion that you just had about those moments before sleep are when we're watching the television. And to me, a great example of that is a child. A child is watching something intensely, a cartoon, and they drowned out everything around them. They don't
Absolutely.
Realize anything's going on.
You know, and the worst part of that is we set our children, and hopefully when I say we, that's not you and I, and I hope it isn't
my
your
children
listeners,
are 38
but the public
and 30.
At large, generally, sets their children in front of television, and it becomes the babysitter.
Yes.
And the research shows that, you know, that is the worst thing you can possibly do. You know,
you're
in
setting
order
them up for
to,
failure by doing that.
Oh, completely. They not only get all this deficiency stuff, they're not only, you know, sold over and over on this notion of consumption, but what happens in the media is simple. In order not to bore you, we must find something you find exciting. So we must stimulate you to a level that meets arousal. So, you know, in 1950, a street vent had a little air swoosh Marilyn Monroe's skirt, a very famous picture. And as she showed off the leg, that was just absolutely titillating.
Mm-hmm,
but it isn't
mm-hmm.
today. It would be very boring. Well,
you
today
know, yeah.
we have to have more sex. We mm-hmm. have to have more violence. In order to meet this threshold of arousal, systematically, our arousal threshold has been desensitized.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have more and more and more. Well, when you plug children into that in the very early get-go, what happens is by the time they become adults, they take for granted what would shock most of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I mean,
and you have an analogy, or you have a story behind that, which was with those movies that began at so many violent. What is that? I heard you talk about that before.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a classic example. Sylvester Stallone, everybody knows who Sylvester Stallone is. You know, Stallone famously started his movie career, you know, with First Blood in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here, I just pulled out the data on this. The number of bad guys killed by Rambo with his shirt on in First Blood was 1. The number of bad guys killed by Rambo with his shirt off, 0. The number of bad guys killed by Rambo, no matter how he was attired, 1. This is 1982, okay?
Right.
Total number of people killed, 1. Now, this shirt on and shirt off is important stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
By the time now there was Rambo 2 that came out in 85, just 3 years later. Number of folks killed with his shirt on, 12. Number of bad guys killed with his shirt off, 46. Total number of guys killed, 58. Okay, now in 1988, it gets worse with Rambo 3, but I'm just going to jump forward. In 2008, Rambo 4, he kills a sum total of 113 people, 113 bad guys. The total number of people killed in the movie, 236. Now remember,
right.
in First Blood, 1982, the how many minutes did it take before anybody was killed? You know, took
right.
the first hour. How many minutes did it take in Rambo 2008 before the first person's killed? 2 minutes and 59 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, instead of starting out telling you a story, they start out killing, and that's. If you go to the movie house today, you see that that is the tempo. They're not about telling stories as much as they're about special effects and shoot 'em up, bang, bang. And you know, the bottom line to that is you look into our society and you say, where's the civility? Why do people experience so much road rage? Why are there shootings in schools like we see? You know, what's going on with this, you know, workers going to work and killing their fellow workers? I mean, this is stuff we didn't see 20
right.
years ago. How come this exists? Well, what is it you think you're training people to do when you put them in front of simulators like we train our pilots? But instead of it being an airplane simulator, it's a shooting simulator. Kill the bad guys.
Right.
What do you expect? What have you trained? So Now, to come full back, here's the real danger then. You sit them in front of the television, they not only get all of this garbage, but, you know, imagine that you went to your hypnotist and you said, you know, I want you to hypnotize me. I want you to tell me I'm going to get sick. And then I want you to tell me, come on back here because you'll fix me for another $100. Because that's basically what you do when you plug into the TV and you hear the gumboo's coming to town. You're going to get it, but run to the pharmacy and get XYZ. It'll cure you. You're being sold sickness.
Right. Yes. And you are. And, you know, I love that analogy that you use there because it shows the differences between, you know, the past and now and why people are always asking, why are our kids the way they are now? You know, back then they would never have done that. And what you just did was explain why, you know, they're being given fed subliminal messages. And so, yeah, they're not, it takes more, you know, that's why each of even the video games, if we want to go to the video games, they're being given more violent and more violent video games because the ones that, you know, Pac-Man, for instance, it was nothing compared to what they need now because of that stimulation they have to have.
Amen.
Yeah. It's amazing,
you know,
to me.
It's incredible. When we look at studies, we run studies to see what's the influence of video games. There is no question about that. You know, the amount of literature that now exists demonstrating the negative influence is just robust. I mean, we can take Grand Theft Auto. It's just one of the popular games out there adults play. And in fact, a study took adults 18 to 25 and asked them in a pre-test for their opinions, their views on drinking and drugs and theft. And
right.
Then asked them just to play the game 1 hour a day for a week. And a week later, did another survey on their attitude with regards to the same issues. And what was discovered was that their attitudes had relaxed. They were much more tolerant towards drinking and drugs and theft. Why? Because that's exactly what they do in Grand Theft Auto. They,
right,
for all intents and purposes, create this alter ego that is out there drinking and drugging and stealing cars.
Right.
When you put children in front of it, it gets even scarier because it's not at all uncommon to ask a child a question such as, how many pets do you have? And to have them say, oh, I've got two. Well, tell me about those pets. Well, you know, I have my dog, and then I have my horse. Wow, you have a horse? You live in an apartment in New York, and you have a horse? Yeah, my horse is in RuneScape. And RuneScape is a game. It's a virtual reality. But what the child is telling you is they cannot tell the difference between the virtual pet that they take everywhere with them in their alter ego playing this game and their real pet. To them, they're both real. And when
right.
that virtual pet is killed, it's a tragedy, and they weep. When something
right.
in the game is taken from them, it's a tragedy. And
mm-hmm.
and how could anybody do that? I mean, and the fact of the matter is some of the ratings on these games exist because you have to be old enough to be able to distinguish between the virtual and the not-so-virtual, not
exactly.
become attached to, you know, the properties that you gain in these so-called virtual reality games, multiplayer virtual reality games. So you're right. You know, there is another area where we are processing information, and it has a subliminal impact on us. It is
right.
it is impelling us in a direction that is not natural to our highest best,
right.
not in the interest of who we really are, selling us ideas and selling us values. And what really compounds that can be simply this. You suggested this earlier. You know, we're creatures that like to have what we believe reinforced. We don't like to be wrong. And so we get a belief system, and then we plug into information that'll reinforce that. Case in point, it's an election cycle out there, and some people are really invested in one party or the other party, and there's all kinds of nasty stuff out there. So if you're supporting the guy that is, you know, let's say, I don't even want to take sides here, so I'm just going to say you're supporting A, and there's a lot of nasty information about B, you just believe it. You
right.
don't check it out. You don't
mm-hmm.
see how true it is. And if A is telling you things that you really want to hear, you're just going, yay. And so
mm-hmm.
the network, the media that would support those beliefs, that's the one you listen to. If
mm-hmm.
there's a network, a media that opposes those beliefs, I mean, we can juxtapose that. You
mm-hmm.
can juxtapose Fox and MSNBC. If I love MSNBC, I'd never listen to Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And if I love Fox, I would never listen to MSNBC. So what have I done? I've said, reinforce what I believe. I'm not interested in the truth.
Right.
And the problem with that is it so dumbs us down from our true potential that we end up, well, I'm reminded, you know, I've been asked, what book in your life, Eldon, has had the greatest impact? And that book is a book I read way back when I was about 25 called The Politics of Experience by R.D. Lang. And Lang says this. He says, the condition of alienation, of being asleep, of being unconscious, of being out of one's mind, is the condition of the normal man, and society highly values its normal man. Thus, it educates children to lose themselves and to become absurd, and thus to be normal. He says, we are not able to even think adequately about the behavior that is at the annihilating edge. And this is the real clincher here. But what we think is less than what we know. What we know is less than what we love. What we love is so much less than what there is. And to that precise extent, we are so much less than what we are.
Yes. I love that. I love that. Because it, to me, it's extremely powerful. It's a statement that kind of puts it into perspective, what we are doing to ourselves. No one's doing this to us. We're doing this to ourselves.
And we have so much potential. That's that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I have just been in awe of human potential. I look at the power of belief. And, you know, our beliefs, they dictate our life, in my view, just as surely as magnetism directs a compass. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I look at the power of belief, knowing that you can access these beliefs using these tools, subliminal and hypnosis, and you can rewrite them, you can reprogram. I look at the power of belief, and I see incredible things done as a result. I see people accomplish goals, do things that just are impossible. I
mm-hmm.
see the power of belief affect the DNA molecule. I
yeah.
see the power of belief heal people miraculously. And I just think for a minute, look, I think the saying goes, if you had faith but the size of a mustard seed, faith is belief. You know, if you had belief in yourself, that tiny little true belief in yourself, if you actually went in, discovered who you were, had that belief in yourself, your quintessential self, would that, I mean, there's the question. If you had a genie, would you give him three wishes, or would you wish to be the genie?
Mm-hmm.
I think within you is a genie.
Yes.
Within you is this absolute power to just enjoy the cornucopia of wonderment in this world that we live, this awe, this the happiness, the peace that every human being deserves.
I know. And using these two, and I have read your book, and using these two, what I call extremely powerful tools, in combination, hypnosis along with this subliminal technology, can literally change our own inner thoughts, beliefs, and that hold us back from being who we truly are.
That's exactly what they do. You're re-scripting. You're using hypnosis maybe to uncover or to give yourself some post-hypnotic suggestions to build some confidence. You're using the subliminal technology without having to close your eyes and take 30 or 40 minutes out of your day, playing in the background. I play them at my desk. I play them all night long when I'm sleeping. I play them in my automobile. Mm-hmm. And what is it doing? It's re-scripting my belief.
Right.
You know, so when I say to myself, I'm good, I'm deserving, I can do this, I don't get talk coming back that says, I've heard that before. Instead,
yes,
my inner chatter says, yeah, go for it. Of course you can.
Yes.
And when
and
that happens, you do it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And the way that you have written this book, it's basically a step-by-step instruction on how you can accomplish this goal, in a sense, to be who you really are and take away all of the nonsense that has been fed to us through subliminal messages all of our life and even now. I mean, you
That's
have
the idea.
This, yeah. It's.
I want to give you the fishing pole. I want to give you the best lures. I want to tell you how to cast. I want to tell you the best places to go catch those fish. And then I want you to just go be a champion fisherman.
Mm-hmm. It's.
Or woman.
Change my thoughts, change my reality. You know, expectations alter our thoughts. If we can change our thoughts, we can change our reality. And you have put this in such a simple form that anyone can use this as an individualized course for themselves. So, you know, it's not that we need to do a particular thing according to. This book is written to where we can do what we need to do for ourselves.
And for about $10. So
I know.
If you, you know, if you really care, if you really want to change something in your life, whether it's, you know, a habit like smoking or weight loss, or it's to overcome a fear, it's in embrace life more fully, it's to increase your learning ability. I mean, we've run double-blind studies and looked at things like attention deficit hyperactive disorder. We've looked at test anxiety. We've looked at clinical depression. We've even looked at value norm anchor points and we've run oncology studies. There are so many ways that you can empower yourself with these tools that if you choose not to, well, then you're just choosing to be right where you are. And if that's stuck, well, accept that that's your choice.
Right, right. But we've only got about 2 minutes left. And so, again, I want to give out Eldon's website and his, and I'm putting one in the chat room right now, but the websites are www.eldontaylor.com. Then we have, okay, I wrote them down here, Eldon, so you want to help me out?
Sure. You know, the eldontaylor.com is where to go get the book because that's where the banner is. You click on the banner. It tells you, you know, go get your book at Amazon or Barnes or BAM, Books a Million. Come on back with your purchase identification number. Input it here. This is how you get your 150-plus free gifts. This is where you register for some powerful drawings like an all-expense-paid trip, airfare, hotel, et cetera, to an I Can Do It conference. So go to eldontaylor.com. That's eldontaylor.com. That's where you go after the book. If you're interested in what my organization does, that's progressiveawareness.org. Or if you're interested in, you know, I don't want to do a subliminal program, I just want to buy one, well, go to intertalk.com. But I encourage you, you know, check out Cindy's gift. Cindy's got a wonderful gift there. She's a luminary supporting it. Go to eldontaylor.com.
And also, Eldon can be found on Facebook. So look him up under Eldon Taylor on Facebook, and he posts some very, very interesting information. I follow him every day. It's just amazing, the stuff. Of course, I'm blown away by you, Eldon. So I get into everything that you do. But we're 10 seconds.
You embarrass me, dear. You embarrass me. Thank you very much. I'm honored by your words.
But thank you so, so much, Eldon, for coming on back onto the show, because this, to me, is like one of my biggest pleasures, is having you on the show, because I'm so into what you do. But anyway, everybody, connect with Eldon. Get this book. You won't regret it. You will absolutely love what you can do with this. And I don't call it a book. I call it a course that you can use every day of your life and improve or change whatever it is that you need to inside of yourself. Anyway, again, Eldon, oh, my gosh, thank you.
Oh, hey, thank you, Cindy. And I mean, sincerely, thank you for your support. Thank you for the opportunity to share. And anytime, I love visiting with you. Anytime, I'm happy to come back.
Thank you. That makes me feel special. But,
well, you are special.
And I think, you know, I think so highly of you. And anyway, I'm going to call it a night. Next week, I have Nancy DeKetch on the show, and coming up on 11:15, Caroline Sutherland, Medical Intuitive. So watch this channel. Love you all. Take care. Good night. Bye-bye, Eldon.
Bye-bye.